Now, this compact, as I said, was made on terms absolutely dictated by the Standard Oil and was very much against the government interest. But it was immediately canceled, and a new contract was written fair to the government and also the oil company. Now, I learned this later when in the post office that the Nixon campaign converted postage stamps sent to them from all over the country, and they received cash for them at the post office. So anybody, any business firm over the country could mail him stamps, and they could take it off as a business expense on their income tax. And then the Nixon campaign could use them as stamps or take them to the post office and convert them into cash. And that was done on such a large scale that there was immediately a regulation put on by the Postal Department that where they could not do that anymore, where they couldn't, they could use them for their own postage, but they couldn't convert them to cash.
But this was tax deductible to the businesses itself.
Yes, and of course that was used, I guess, by Democrats too, because I know I got somebody to do a $200 mailing for Richard Richards. But then they did the mailing and mailed them, and I don't know whether they took it off their income tax or not.
So that's what you're saying, though, is that.
But he converted it into cash. The post office, if you had 10-cent stamps, then 10 stamps you weren't using, you could take them back and get your dollar back.
Mm-hmm.
Get 30 cents back. But there were more things, more laws made to change the laws after Richard Richards did it within the law.
Mm-hmm.
That it's really something. I wish somebody ought to research that and just write a book on all the laws that were changed that he did it when it was just shady practices. But several well-publicized debates were held between Nixon and Voorhees, and the first one was in the South Pasadena High School Auditorium. And Morris Chotiner was chairman for Nixon, and I'm telling you, you can't conceive of a more hateful or mean, absolutely mean man. Jerry Voorhees was a Yale graduate he was educated for the Episcopalian ministry, and he just was bewildered at such crooks. He just didn't know how to take them. And all over the district, Nixon had billboards in huge letters, vote for your congressman, Richard Nixon.
He wasn't
a congressman at all.
Besides the thing in the postage stamps and stamp things like that Jerry Voorhees was a communist and that he was keeping oil from going to the South Seas, what sort of things make you say that like Morris Chotiner was a crook?
Well, I wish you could have seen how he treated Nixon then. I mean, treated Jerry Voorhees at this debate. He was the master of ceremonies. And even Chotiner was the master of ceremonies. And he died not long ago here in, he's been associated with Nixon. And of course, Nixon had to get rid of him publicly because I think he had such a vicious reputation. But with the contempt and the voice and everything that he called on Jerry Voorhees and we tried to get a lot of people there, but they had so many people there that every time Jerry talked, they'd boo and boo, and you couldn't hear it. It was just an awful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just had such revulsion for that. You can't hardly, you just can't conceive of how mean he was.
But you never received this kind of treatment from any other Republican candidate?
Oh, no, never had. They never was another type of candidate like that, but they were so sure that they were going to get it that they spent $1 million in that campaign. And another gimmick. Now Jerry's father was a very, very fine gentleman, and he lived in Pasadena, and they gave Mr. Voorhees Sr. They had him. He was appointed some man of the year or something, and they put more pressure on him. Not to give, because he practically financed most of Jerry's campaigns, because none of us, we never knew how to raise money. We never raised much money about it. I don't remember too much that went on the San Gabriel campaign, but and I mean the San Gabriel Playhouse, at that big Mission Playhouse, they had another debate. But I got a they had little pins. Vote for Richard Nixon, stick a pin in the CIO. I don't know what that meant, but
the CIO.
That was the Congress. That was at that time considered quite left wing,
mm-hmm.
And the CIO did not endorse Voorhees, but they pretended that they did. Mm-hmm. Voorhees wouldn't go along with them on some of their things, but Nixon and all their literature put that the CIO had endorsed Nixon, and that's what, I mean, endorsed Voorhees. And that's, they used that he was endorsed by the CIO.
And so that would be part of the backup for the thing that Jerry Voorhees
Yeah, because that the government at that time was sending, they had investigators out here to investigate the CIO, and I think maybe they did find a couple of so-called communists in some of their
unions. And this is the other half of the AFL-CIO
before they joined.
So as a labor group, at this time, as I said, there were several labor groups that were comparatively to the left besides...
Well, it was concentrated in the CIO. I don't think the AFL was so, at that time... tainted with the communist leadership, but the CIO did not endorse Voorhees. They didn't like him, and but anyway, Nixon published that he did. The business community considered of the United States considered. Jerry Voorhees more of a like a mild-mannered crackpot who had strange ideas about money, and he had written a book, Out of Debt, Out of Danger, about the Federal Reserve System that exposed the many evils in our money system. And the Constitution states that the government should print the money and regulate the value thereof, not the Federal Reserve System, who prints it and loans it to the government with interest. It is the biggest farce if you've ever really studied that. But this book was getting national publicity.
Voorhees.
And Voorhees was being written up in many responsible publications.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry understood money and banking as his father, that's where his father had all his money, at a string of banks in Kansas. But the money lenders decided Voorhees had to go, and that was why there was so much money back of Nixon. That was one of the main reasons.
Okay, so
Nixon,
Voorhees was standing on the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, and he was... of course, people can talk, but when Nixon, when he was getting so much high class, his articles were being printed in so many, that's the reason that they were involved to get him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was stated that this was the first political campaign where $1 million was spent for a candidate in the congressional district.
Mm-hmm.
And Nixon was truly the best candidate money could buy. I'm telling you. It's... but this is funny. It was, I'm telling you, I don't think I'll ever have such a sad day as that was on the night of Election Day. And we expected to lose South Pasadena and San Marino in my district, and we expected to win big in Monterey Park and Wilmar and Garvey, with Alhambra was the key point, and if we won in Alhambra, we would win in the district. Then I stayed in the Alhambra City Hall getting the results of each precinct as they came in. That's how we got them in. We had no radio or anything. We had to copy down as each precinct. Then I had to report to the San Gabriel headquarters where Jerry was and whether he was winning or losing. And it was such a sad occasion because he was losing in Alhambra when I went in that night. I just thought I'd die. I just didn't see how I could stand it. But in August of that year, Lou decided maybe he wasn't nice enough to me because I was working so hard in politics. And so he decided that I had to have a fur coat. And I didn't want one. It seemed useless in California to have a fur coat. But at his insistence, we attended the August fur sales, and he bought me a lovely fur black coat. And I was on duty it is still on duty, that fur coat in Las Vegas, for my niece when he wears it in cold days. But all fall he kept reminding me that I should go in and get it, but I just didn't have the time or inclination. But the next day after election, he said, I had to go in and get that fur coat. It was cold, and he bought it in August and paid cash for it. Well, I promised him I would. So I went in, and I gave the girl the receipt, and she brought it in, and she tried it on, and she said, well, you don't look like you're very happy. She said, are you ill? And I said, I feel terrible. and she said, well, what's the matter? And I began to cry. I just struck me, and she said, well, what's the matter? She said, can I help her? That poor girl, I guess she thought I'd lose my mind. I said, it just dawned on me, I guess, I couldn't believe before then that Jerry lost. And I said, no, I'm not sick. I said, we just lost the best congressman that ever lived. And, you know, I started in crying and sobbing, and she got out of there like, she thought, boy, I'm not going to be tied in here with this crazy woman. And then I never did like that coat. But I thought that was awful, to think that poor that Jerry Vorey's lost.
And now Richard Nixon, then, that was his first win. He, 1946.
Yeah.
He becomes a congressman from just 53rd.
Well, he was a congressman from the 12th, the old 12th district.
And up to this time, now, your campaigning activities have been in managing precinct workers and the offices and appointments for your speakers and the distribution of literature.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and the mailing, charge of the mailing. But then in, I was in headquarters, I was in the Alhambra Post Office for 2 years, and Nixon wrote to more people in Republican headquarters telling them to get veterans and disabled veterans to file against him. Because at that time under civil service, a disabled veteran went to the top of the list, and you couldn't pass a disabled veteran with a non-veteran.
And be hard for you as a woman to have been a veteran.
So anyway, they had to be had three names turned in, so they had to hire a veteran. So anyway, I worked right after that. I got out and I worked for Jimmy Roosevelt at the headquarters when he was running for governor in 50. But I really and truly worked for Douglas.
Helen DeHagen Douglas. And this is his first paid job. I was just kind of asking, you must have been spending a lot of hours by the time you're with Jerry Voorhees on his last campaign.
Yeah.
That, you know, about how many hours a day you do?
Oh, I worked for Jerry just all day long. Of course, we worked for the ticket. Just so hard. We were on duty all the time. I know I'll never forget when my little boy was down in the headquarters, and I got a whole crew of girls to come in from Alhambra High, would take precinct lists home and that night, and then address them, then bring back the material on the way to school the next morning. Because we hated to give them out, but they couldn't stay and work. And if we'd lose our precinct list, we only got one copy of them. But I got a whole crew that would bring them home that night and bring them back the next morning. And this one little girl was so shocked, and she said, oh, when I grow up, she said, I'm going to make a career of politics. And Edgar was in there. I don't know how old Edgar was. He wasn't very old. But I said, I didn't say anything. And said, Mother, he said, how come you didn't correct her? She said, you should have told her that politics just cost you money. I thought that was so cute that he said that. Since you can't make money out of politics, politics just cost you money. So he knew that politics just cost you money.
Was Lou as active in the party?
Oh, no, he never did anything.
So he
wouldn't be hardly ever
changed
vote.
His registration.
Oh, yeah, he was always voted.
But after that, how did he feel about you being out of the home?
He didn't care.
And I think you mentioned that Ethel was...
Ethel was staying with the Stanley. So she helped the kids. I can remember, though, once, you know, you think you work so hard, and there's seven to vote for county committee, and somehow our district only had six on the list. Seven, I don't know how they fell out. But at that time, there were about 10 that wanted that seventh spot on a write-in campaign. But I wanted Mary Russell, that was a good friend of ours, and she was one of our club people. And so I was on the election board in our precinct, and I called up all about 20 people to see if they wouldn't write in Mary Russell. Mm-hmm. Mary, and I said, but just the county committee, I knew nobody gave it on anyway, but just write in Mary Russell. So when I was on the board, I had to tell them, and do you know, this show, you think people listen to what you say and all that stuff, and do you know about my 20 that I called, I think about maybe, about 12 wrote the name in, but of those 12, 7 wrote the name Lillian Russell. They didn't write it down. They said, well, now, what did she say, Russell? Then they, and I thought, well, if that is, but I knew that McAdoo was running for senator at that time. I never did work in his campaign, but, well, I did as a Democrat, but not especially for him. But he wrote in Mary Russell for me, but I saw that he crossed over and voted for the Republican McAdoo. And that night, and he said, that ballot secret says, how did you know how I voted? And I said, I knew you were writing on Mary Russell. She wrote in Mary Russell for me. And, you know, that went back that his father was postmaster. Then when...
this is when we had crossed the
Yeah, well, that's when we had cross-fighting. But anyway, McAdoo was something that, he wasn't for Wilson, because Wilson got postmaster against Hughes, that his father was for.
Mm-hmm.
And Hughes was running against Wilson, and McAdoo was working for Wilson. I guess he was his son-in-law.
Mm-hmm. But McAdoo had been on Wilson's cabinet.
Yeah, he was the railroad dictator, and he was a big shot in Wilson's cabinet. But that enmity that Wilson won against Hughes when his dad had, because that time postmaster was entirely political, and his dad lost his job as postmaster there, so he didn't like McAdoo.
Okay, I ask you some real general quick questions to kind of have you served on county committees yourself?
Oh, yes, I ran for county committee.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it real well, because the county committee is, but they didn't really do a job. That's why the council was necessary. If the county committee and state committee had done their jobs, the council would never have been necessary. But the council was the best movement of the Democratic Party. It really elected them in 1958. Kitty, don't you scratch that ear. Kitty, no. Oh, you know, he's got that sore ear. Get off the table. Yeah, get off the table. Kitty's going to scratch, and it's peeling out. Well, go on here. I know if you went on it, just go.
Okay, so you've served on county committees
and state committees,
and on the executive.
I was on the executive board of the state committee for about 20 years.
As what you do in an officer?
Well, the there's two from each congressional district on the executive board, one man and one woman, and they have to attend the state committee meetings all over the state, and they really are supposed to make policy for the Democratic Party.
So that's every 2 months. Every 2 months, the executive meeting. And they met all over the state?
Yes, in different parts.
And you never minded the fact that you're traveling around and doing any other political work?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, could you describe, like, what the club, there are another, you have the study club down here, but you founded so many clubs.
Well, we had the 53rd Assembly District, the Democratic Club there. I founded it, and I was president of it for 10 years. Mm-hmm. But this club, I didn't find it. Found it. It's been going since 32.
Okay, now is this called Democratic Club? Or?
Well, their clubs were chartered by the county committee.
Mm-hmm.
And we had quite a few good clubs going. And it was, you want to talk about councils now?
Yeah.
Well, Cranston is the one who called the first meeting together of all the clubs of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And the state and county committee and the conventions were in Fresno. And in 58, the slogan was Sweep the State in 58.
Mm-hmm.
And that really brought the Democratic Party. That's where we won in 58.
Mm-hmm.
We won the governorship, we won everything. We had endorsing conventions, and the party did something for the person because they got a complete mailing. They had the council would always put out a complete mailing for their endorsed candidate. And before, we had government absolutely by lobby. That all the years that Warren was governor, you simply, the Democrats couldn't expect loyalty from their people because they never supported them. They had to get all their money from the lobbyists. I remember a state chairman from Santa Barbara, and why I went through his voting record, and he voted Republican over much more than half the time because he was just such a nice fellow, and he was good attorney there, and people liked him and just voted him, and they voted him state chairman. He didn't anymore do anything for the Democrats because he wasn't loyal to any Democratic platform. But it was when Cranston brought the council together, when they got, they always had a Democratic platform, but it didn't mean anything. But when we did something, when we could back our candidates and give them money and give them a mailing. Oh, I worked so hard on those council mailings. And we didn't collect money for them from the clubs.
And these are organized at the congressional district level?
Yes, and at that time they were organized clear down to the assembly district level.
Mm-hmm.
They had councils in the assembly districts and then a congressional district council to endorse your congressman. Assemblyman to endorse your assemblyman, and then in Fresno, statewide to endorse the statewide candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so thrilling to go to those Fresno conventions because every national figure was there.
Mm-hmm.
You got to see every national figure there was because they all came out and asked for their endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
And it really put us on the map. And what got the council in disrepute was that it got to be more of an issues media than endorsing, and it got so that the people like our club, well, we had such a big club that we had the biggest representation, but they'd stay until 3 and 4 o'clock and hammer, and it would just seem to be a battle of wits on one attorney getting another attorney down and this and this. The old ladies would all leave, and all the clubs would, and then it would just be the more or less the real left-wingers that stayed on, and they put forth so many resolutions and took so many issues that were so far advanced that the office holders wouldn't back them up.
Mm.
And maybe they were all right, but they were so far advanced, you can't really go too far ahead of your party. And when it got to the point that the elected officials of the Democratic Party didn't want the council endorsement, when it meant it didn't, of course the papers, the council was so successful that the papers fought so against them, but then they made the most of the few resolutions that were passed that were so left-wing, but it did get so that our club got so, and we were the biggest support for the council here, so they got out of the council, and so many of the clubs did get out of the council,
mm-hmm.
which was too bad in a way,
mm-hmm.
but that we just didn't have the staying power that the young people did, like that we're all for McGovern, and they just didn't, we couldn't cope with them. But then when Kenick and when the Assembly candidate, when they'd ask, they said, we don't even want the endorsement. Mm-hmm. And even when Cranston came back, he always, he was very leery of it.
So from 58 when it started, how long do you think it was before the left-wing influence took over the
castle? It was about 64, 60 that they sort of took over. Mm-hmm. But it still is the best idea. It really is the best idea.
So you've been active in the club, in
the council,
county,
the county
state.
Committee, and the state committee. I know when I came down here, I was still on the county committee, and Kenick wanted to put me on the state committee, but he, at that time, he didn't want to appoint any county committee members because said all the Democrats had to give away was a few titles anyway, so so I didn't run again for the county committee, mm-hmm. and I've never ran for the county committee here. But this, our county committee in this district is quite active, and they really try to put on a job. They had charged.
They're responsible for largely exposing the registered Democrats to their candidates and getting the campaign running. That the end of the private era is really the campaigning workforce, and I think it's
the county committee.
Yeah, are they mainly interested in organizing the campaigns and making sure that the functions
of the county committee. Well, the real function is the state committee is to make policy and the county committee is to carry it out, but the county committee just doesn't do it. And that means that the individual, like the Renee campaign, that's entirely separate. The county committee isn't doing much on it, and the Shell campaign will be separate, and so will the Hannaford campaign. And our state chairman now is supposed to, right after Carter's elected, have an overall a state committee headquarters for all of them. And Williams says, I said, it's just nonsense to have a big state committee headquarters downtown. Says that there's no parking, there's no, it's just a place for all these old senior citizens to come in and sit down, and he doesn't think it'll be worthwhile. I think it would probably be better to have two active ones in the two assembly districts than have one downtown. I think maybe he's got a point, mm-hmm. because there's really no parking and there's not much walking mm-hmm. downtown. It's a little different than it used to be. You had to have a downtown headquarters, but I've always been chairman of it here, and we had wonderful headquarters downtown. Mm-hmm. But the big thing in Long Beach was we had the big state council convention here in 62, and oh my, we had it at the arena, and I was chairman of the whole thing, the arrangements, and I thought of all the things that I ever had Mr. Miles, I think, was the project, he was superintendent of the arena there. And I kept bugging him so often for keys that finally he gave me a key, one key, to unlock any door in the whole arena. And he said he'd never given it to anybody before. And I said, well, and that key just worried the life out of me. I got a strong thing and stuck it around my neck. I thought I'd lose it. But I had to get officers that for every separate officers for Cranston and for Mosk, and everybody was running for offices then, and we had a terrific campaign. But Unruh was fighting the council movement then. He couldn't control it, so he was fighting it. And Johnson was coming out to speak, but he had enough power to keep him in Palm Springs. He never got here. Boy, was I mad. Oh, the Democrats, you know, always have to fight. They always have to get factions. And Unruh tried to kill the council, and he started another organization. And then he tried to get Brown against him, but Brown would never vote against it because they helped him so to put him in. But it was a drag. Later on, it got to be a drag on the party, which is very too bad. But the Democratic Party, I could remember, this was long ago in Chicago when they had both the Democratic and the Republican convention there, and one radio commentator said that the Republican delegates all look alike. Said they're all from the same strata of American society, but says the Democrats, my, from the most distinguished-looking Southern gentleman to the wildest-eyed leader and to the law, old lady to the husband, they certainly are the dominant society. So I guess it takes an awfully strong leader to get them all together.
I was looking at the sheet you have on the various organizations, and you are a 15-year member and 10-year president of the Women's First Democratic
Club.
That was the one.
53rd Assembly District.
53rd Assembly District, and that was the one in Alhambra.
Yes.
That you were.
And every summer, honestly, I most gave my whole summer to this enormous picnic we gave for all the candidates, but Jerry Voorhees was the speaker. And, we worked hard on that. And that was the, of course, then it was, people didn't have cars. We could put out handbills and expect a big crowd from, I mean, they had cars, they didn't have gas to go places. But all the work I did on those picnics, oh my.
And so that was a woman's
yes.
club. Now, did you find, were they women's clubs mainly to, why did you make them women's clubs?
Well, I don't know, they were afternoon, they met in the afternoon.
And this was the time when women
uh-huh.
were available.
Uh-huh.
Were your precinct workers mixed between
yes,
male and
yes,
female,
yes.
or were they?
Yes, they were mixed. I know George Brown, who's a congressman from, was for years Monterey Park,
mm-hmm.
and then he ran against, for senator, against Tunney, and he lost out, but then he ran again from the Assembly. He's now the candidate from, he's the congressman from San Bernardino. I gave him his first precinct to work in Monterey Park. He came in the office and volunteered. He was working in the co-op, and then he ran for, I gave him Monterey Park, and he ran for councilman there, then mayor, and then he ran for Congress when they got elected for years.
Do you see many of the women working up their way through the precinct work the same way the men did, or?
Oh, they did more precinct work than men.
So women did more precinct
yeah.
work than men. But it seems also that the men tend to, if they work, that they also end up running for offices.
Yes, they were working to build themselves up. More for public office.
And the women you feel were
they just worked for the good of it. I remember after Voorhees, we had Steve Zetterberg running for Congress, and he was such a nice fellow. I couldn't do much for him because that was 48, and I was in the post office then. But in 46, 48, when did Woodrow Wilson Sayre run? I guess he ran in 50. In that district, and I got an idea for him that, you know, he's the grandson of Woodrow Wilson, and he was a professor at Claremont, and he ran for Congress, and he looked just exactly like Woodrow Wilson. But I went around and got more people to write an individual letter to everybody in their precinct on a neighborly basis, just that they met him and that they this and this and this. And that's the only precincts that he won in the whole congressional district that I got these individual letters out. And some of them would do it if I'd write the letter. So I had three girls. I typed out three different letters, and they'd choose the one they wanted. Then I had girls, high school girls, would come in at night, and they'd type for me. Then I'd bring them around for them to sign. But if they were at the corner druggist and had their own personal stationery, I'd write it on their stationery. And I told you that, didn't I, that plan was adopted here for Shell?
Oh, Shell used to say it.
Well, he didn't use it at
to
get
a personal letter that
a personal letter
be sent to
everybody in their precincts.
Mm-hmm.
But Shell's couldn't get it that personal, but he got it signed by somebody, but the same letter. And this person didn't have to, when I went to get this person, I didn't ask them if they'd pay for the stamps. They just gave their name.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a terrific gimmick, and with this new process, you'd think that their name was at the top, you know, each assembly district, or each precinct had a separate name at the top. So their own name as an individual. You know how, I don't know how they can do that, but it looks just like it's it doesn't look like a form. Yeah, it doesn't look like a form letter. You'd swear it wasn't a form letter. Mm-hmm. But they adapted that, and Fred thinks that idea elected him. Because this precinct he won in, and no Democrat ever won in this precinct. And a lot of people, they were so thrilled to get a letter from their neighbor. And I had a Bernice Brassy sign, and she said, my neighbors come over and said, oh, I didn't know you were a Democrat. I didn't know you were, she'd never worked active in politics at all.
And they asked all the members of the precinct, or just a Democrat?
They wrote it to them. See, it was a general, the letter didn't amount to much. It was just more of a friendly little letter. Mm-hmm. Because it had to be general to send it to both Democrats and Republicans. Mm-hmm. But it was a gimmick that worked. Mm.
So I see also here that you were a charter member and co-founder with Helen DeHagen Douglas and Mrs. Tom Ford of the Democratic
Women's
Forum.
That's a...
Now, how does the Women's Forum work?
In politics,
yeah.
How do they fit in? Well, they really, organizations change their images. When this was founded, it was very, not left-wing, but on that's Helen, it was Helen's entirely. And
it was more liberal.
More liberal, extremely liberal. And the official part of the party at that time was more conservative. But the forum has changed through the years. The forum now, they will not charter with the county committee, Los Angeles County Committee, and I don't know how they get by, because now most they've had the purity of elections laws that I think if they really shouldn't, if they clamp down on them, no Democratic organization is supposed to be allowed to raise money if they're not chartered with the county committee, but they do. But they... they're completely dominated now by Carmen Warshaw, mm-hmm. who has developed from the liberal wing of the party to a very conservative wing. She got so mad at Brown that he didn't appoint her national committee woman, and he appointed Libby Smith from up north, and the man was down here, and she went over the night Reagan was elected and was in his headquarters, and I've never liked her since for doing that. But she's come back. She is a Democrat at heart, and she gives a lot of money for it, and she's sharp as tacks. But she's always, her husband got appointed the commission, the airport commission by Yorty, and she stayed with more right-wing members of the party.
Does the forum make sense on how the women in the party...
Well, the forum are, now, yes, the forum is now dedicated, they just give money to women candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having a big affair for women candidates in September at a luncheon. And
they
all
began with a...
Well, they didn't have the policy, but I think, yes, their charter was for women.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to give, so they have helped primarily women.
So, when you were running for Helen DeHagen, or helping Helen DeHagen, that was your first paid position, was managing her office in L.A. when she was running for United States Senate.
Yes.
And this would, as far as I can remember, it's the only woman to run for United States Senate from California.
Yeah.
Was that made into an issue, do you feel?
That she was a woman?
That she was a woman?
I don't think so. She won out over Bodie, and he had the... It was just a filthy campaign that Nixon ran, that the communist scare was so strong then, and he just tied her to left-wing causes. And his main slogan of that was, she voted with Mark Antonio so many times. Mark Antonio was a very, very left-wing congressman from New York that voted the straight Democratic platform, except on a few issues that Helen voted against him that were very left-wing. Well, naturally, if you count that all the... Sure, she voted with Mark Antonio so many times because she voted every time he voted for the things that were the Democratic platform, but it was such an unfair issue. But that was... used all over. She voted with Mark Antonio.
You mentioned
also about
Pink Lady.
Oh, and I want to tell you a story about that. I got a call at 4 o'clock one morning from Ruth Liebeck, who was Helen Gahagan Douglas's, well, Ed Liebeck, her husband, was his paid, her paid field man, and Ruth was his wife that worked for him, worked for money. Well, they were in the Liebeck, the Douglas campaign. But he said that Mrs. Roosevelt was coming out here, and that Nixon, she had made a speech against Nixon on account of this pink paper, that Nixon was threatening to sue her because said that he didn't say it. So she said that she was coming out here to be on some speaking tour. And they wanted, if Ruth had one of them saved in her files, and Ruth said that they have gone down to every single person, that they'd gone through everything and they couldn't find any. It's funny, you know, how these things soon disappear, that, you know, and so she got me out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning and wanted to know if I had any. And I said, I don't know, I got old boxes out in a rented garage of just junk. And I went out, and I went out, and I got them in here all over this house, and I called her back at 6 o'clock and said, I found it. And she had a guy out here at 7, mm-hmm. and he picked it up.
And this was
for Mrs. Roosevelt. She wanted a copy of it.
Now, but what is it she's getting a copy by?
This pink sheet that Nixon put out, libeling her.
Libeling Helen Gahagan Douglas.
And it was on pink paper. So when her plane landed, he, because he was her front man or something, mm-hmm. he ran up, and Nixon was all there with the photographers and with the, he had somebody there to subpoena her or something, whatever he was going to sue her, and so she was waving it when she was coming down the steps, but I never did get it back. But boy, was I glad I had it.
So he never did see it.
No, he would have just sued her anyway, and if there'd been nobody had a copy, who could have said?
How widely did he distribute that?
Well, I don't know. It was all over Southern California, but it was all over Northern, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was certainly distributed. And I know I got out a pamphlet, Catholics for Nixon, because our tidings, Catholics for Douglas, and our tidings was so much against Nixon at that time. Old McIntyre figures, you know, he's the one who started him. And I had the most prominent Catholics all over the United States, and that's about the best job of organization I ever did. Almost every church in this district had distributed this after every Mass,
mm-hmm.
and the Sunday before election. And McIntyre called me in. Oh, was he mad? Well, I had a young attorney come with me.
Cardinal
McIntyre.
Yeah.
And he said that I was using a captive audience or something. Anyway, he said, Mrs. Remley, he says, I think you must have been baptized a Democrat. And I looked at him and I said, Your Excellency, I said, I do take my politics very seriously, but I don't consider it a sacrament. And you know what he said?
What?
Oh, I was so mad at him. He said, well, touche, you won that one. then he said he said to me, I've got to give you credit. You are a wonderful politician. And I said, well, on the contrary, Your Excellency, I said, I think I'm a very poor politician because I'm so mad and I can't. And I said, you're sitting there with a smile on your face and I'm so mad. And I said, I know you'd probably like to wipe me off the face of the earth. And I said, I really think you're the better politician.
Oh, my.
Oh, I was so mad at him. I was so mad at him I could die.
Angry for
because you know you're sort of impressed to be. I don't know. I think he was Archbishop then.
Yeah,
I think he was Archbishop McIntyre. But I was sure mad at him, and he said, "Well, he would have to give me." He said, "I because every time the tidings had things, I would write in protest." And he said that I was his most intelligent, whether they use protester or something, dissenter or something of that type. But I want to tell